today and next week, probably, I'll be dealing with a topic that comes up when you speak about Pharaoh and him having his heart hardened. So I just thought this might be a nice, beside the study that we're doing on Sunday morning in Exodus, piece of information that might help you to understand that a little bit better. I'm not really going to go through that particular thing, but just the concept. There are always people who quibble about what that hardening means, and was God right to do that? And basically they infer that and imply that God is unjust. So that's really the concept that we'll be dealing with here. And will be probably a two-parter. But Paul had to deal with that. I mean, he brings it up in the book of Romans. And he's got arguments in there that answer the objections. It's like he anticipated the people asking the question, wait a minute, well, if that's true, then this means whatever it is that they'd say next. And so he answers those questions, and it's really helpful to look at those as to how he answers the questions, and of course the questions that he answers is really what's critical. But he's rhetorically answering the objection, is there unrighteousness with God? In chapter 9, Romans 9, you don't have to turn there, I'm just looking to make sure I got the right place. 9 and 11, 11 mostly. It is clear that whatever Paul says in those places, there will be some objection to it, and that's that question, you know, is God right to do that? It basically has to do with his choice of who he's going to use to bring the Messiah into history, you know, what line genealogically he's going to be using. Now, some people think that it means way more than that, and they would say that it means that God chooses whoever will be saved or not. Usually don't do the or not part, but they do talk about this as an explanation for that. But it is hard to make that case, and yet they make it still. And we'll probably deal with that a little bit along the way, too. Sorry to be so vague at this point, but Paul's going to be dealing with this quibbling objector and be talking about vessels of honor and vessels of dishonor, basically. And that brings up the notion of God being the potter. And God is indeed the potter, and he has full control as such over the clay. And yet it is something that we need to qualify and make sure that you understand a little bit more specifically and technically before you jump to any conclusions. So, again, rhetorically, Paul answers the objection, is there unrighteousness with God? He's answered in the negative, explaining that God explained to Moses that he knew best how to distribute his special favor. If God had answered Moses in the way Moses asked about that one certain situation where he prays to the Lord, the nation would have been consumed. I don't know if you know what I'm referring to, but this is the prayer that's on the lips of Moses in the fact that he offers to be blotted out of the book of life himself if God won't spare the people. And he just doesn't have any idea what he's asking. I mean, I know it sounds like he's very magnanimous and generous, but he's really trying to leverage God into doing what he think, what Moses thinks is right. So if God had answered Moses like Moses asked, there wouldn't be any Israel. God knows best, and that's the idea. Similarly, the story of Pharaoh shows that it's not man's will, but God's strategy that shapes, ultimately, all of history. It even clarifies the Lord's motives and his purposes and his actions. Let's also be reminded that some will still suggest then, okay, then let us do evil so that good may come. And that's an objection, of course, that Paul brings up in his own book of Romans, in Romans 3:8. Or they also would ask, why does God still find fault for who withstands his will? In other words, if God is making all these decisions for us, then whatever we do is in his will, even the evil that we do, and so let's go for it. But that's absolutely inconsistent and wrong before the Lord, and Paul makes sure that we know that. Allow me to take a moment and speak to the issue of the tone of the objector, or the nature of the question. That's important. That's how the question is asked and the tone of voice that's being used to ask the question. This is important. You're talking to God. And you better have both of those things right when you do so. So let's bring up an example. Habakkuk sincerely questioned God. I mean, he was really baffled about what God was telling him he was going to do. And yet he did not provoke a command from God to keep quiet. It's how he asked it. The question was valid. And the tone in which he asked it was valid and respectful is what I mean. Similarly, God commends what Job said in his sincere bewilderment at what he thought were God's actions in his own life. He just didn't get it. And he asked in a respectful way, never blaming God, never calling into question God's motives. He does it in a way that is in keeping with talking to the potter as a piece of clay. And it's never the intention of God to knock or tear down in some way the questions or objections of a person who wants to be real with him. That's the big difference. And Paul's always reasonable in his replies to honest questions. He and God are not on the same level, but he's following God, doing what God would do and does. So Paul and God only get angry with quibblers who willfully or carelessly misrepresent his view. And that's what brings us to a specific objector in Romans chapter 9. In that place, Paul frames the question as have his Jewish critics. And in answering them, he uses Scripture as an authority, actually the authority, for the objector. Now this shows his critic to be Hebrew, for it doesn't do any good to quote Scriptures to others who don't know the Scriptures and don't have these Scriptures as their authority. So Paul's critic willfully misrepresented the grace of God in Romans 3. I'm referring to Romans 3:8. And why not say, as we are slanderously reported, and some claim that we say, let us do evil that good may come. And then he says, their condemnation is just. And then in Romans 9:14, what shall we say then? There is no injustice with God, is there? May it never be. For he says to Moses, I will have mercy on whom I have mercy, and I will have compassion on whom I have compassion. Now that's a reference to Exodus 33:19. And that's where this all gets started, pretty much, I guess. It's hard to see it starting anyplace else. So this whole idea of God being unrighteous by choosing who he wants to use, that's the problem with the question. You're blaming God, and the tone of it is also wrong as well. Don't have time to go into all that, but that's what we were saying a minute ago. So Paul has pictured God as moving in history. Romans 9:18. So then he has mercy on whom he desires, and he hardens whom he desires. And that's where this whole argument about Pharaoh comes up, and this concept that God is unfair to do such a thing, or unrighteous to do such a thing. And Paul is referring to that. But we know that God's plan and his will is not irresistible. Luke plainly says that in Luke 7:30. We've already talked about that if you've been following along. We've also seen that in the Exodus story, that God's will is hardly irresistible. It's still true that God will achieve his plan regardless of people resisting his will for them or for a whole nation or anything in between. But he'll ultimately achieve his plan for the world in spite of those who resist his will. But the individual still has his own moral choice, whether or not to reject God's plan for him. So the question of Romans 9:19, and that says, you will say to me then, why does he still find fault? For who resists his will? Is one of those questions that Paul is going to be a little bit upset about. And it's a flagrant misrepresentation of Paul's teachings. And he reacts not very calmly in a docile fashion. He is probably still thinking about the question of Romans 3:8 when he answers, which is based on a misrepresentation. Why not do evil that good may come? That's just unbelievably inconsistent and wrong. But Paul was angry, but he didn't take the time to destroy that mindset in detail. Instead, he only says their condemnation is just, and he passes on by it. So here in Romans 9:19, the equally untrue misrepresentation is passed over without a detailed refutation also, but there is a reply, and it's fairly curt. Paul's answer, you will say to me then, why does he still find fault? For who resists his will, reveals the ignorance and stupidity of such a misrepresentation. Paul would never say that. And yet it's on the lips of this objector, which is sometimes called an interlocutor. I guess if you're from somewhere else, you might say it's an interlocutor, but it's interlocutor, far as I know. It just sounds a little bit better. But how could the misrepresenter or the objector or the interlocutor reply against God as is supposed by Paul? He could not resist God's will, could he? Therefore, Paul says, you're resisting it now. Right now, you are doing the very thing that you say can't be done by asking this question. Now, why was Paul's Jewish heckler resisting the revelation of God and God's ways? Well, we don't know for sure, but it could be that he just disliked the way God was using the nation of Israel without any reference to Israel's supposed good works or meritorious value. It's not a new sentiment, since Paul goes back to a similar event when Isaiah had a vision of God using a specifically chosen individual, Jacob and Cyrus to be, in particular, to shape Israel's future. Cyrus is a heathen king. He's anointed as God's shepherd. Look in Isaiah 44:28 and 45:1-4 for that information. But he was anointed as a God's shepherd for the sake of God's chosen people, or call him God's servant Israel. Isaiah attacked those who think themselves wiser than God. That's really the problem. And he says, woe to the one who quarrels with his maker, an earthenware vessel among the vessels of earth. Will the clay say to the potter, what are you doing? Or the thing you are making, he has no handles. Just as the potter decided on special privileges like having handles or whatever decorations or anything like that that goes into pottery, so special privileges like election or being chosen or being invited, it's a little more specific and correct, to certain positions, places of authority and privilege are decided by God alone, for he knows what is best. That's at the bottom of all of this, the idea that God knows best. It would be ridiculous for a mere creature to set itself up as knowing better. Well, we're going to stop right there because we've gone long enough. Like I said, this is going to be a multi-parter, and we'll pick up again next week. So until then, when we see each other again, Lord willing, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine on you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance on you and give you peace.